But it was back in AD 325 that a huge decision was made when Emperor Constantine gathered together over 300 bishops of the Roman Church in what was called the Council of Nicaea to discuss a number of doctrinal issues. So here you have a Roman emperor who was a sun worshiper gathering these bishops together to make doctrinal decisions. So after the meeting was over, Constantine proclaimed the results of the meeting. And the following is from the source, and you could find this on a number of sources. This is from the Christian Classics Ethereal Library website. So this is what he wrote and proclaimed. "Let us then have nothing in common with the Jews, who are our adversaries. Let us with one accord walk therein, my much honored brethren, studiously avoiding all contact with that evil way. By the unanimous judgment of all, it has been decided that the most holy festival of Easter should be observed everywhere, celebrated on one and the same day. And it is not seeming that in so holy a thing there should be any division." Unquote. So in one swell, one swoop, a major decision was made, and it was supported by 300 church bishops in the Roman Church, that one of God's festivals was replaced by a pagan celebration. It was a complete reversal of at least three of God's laws that are found over here in Leviticus 23. So let's look at Leviticus 23, verse 4. Leviticus 23, verse 4. "These are the feasts of the Lord, holy convocations which you shall proclaim at their appointed times. On the 14th day of the first month at twilight is the Lord's Passover." So if you look at these two verses, you can see that first of all, we are told these are the feasts of the Lord. Easter is not a feast of the Lord. It is a man-made celebration. So one of the things that he did do was say, no longer are we going to keep the way of the Jews at that time. We're not going to keep anything of Passover. We're actually going to keep Easter. And the other thing is, it says that these days were to be proclaimed at their appointed times. Well, God is the one that appoints the times when they are to be kept, not man. The Passover was appointed to be kept on the 14th day of the first month, in the first month. They chose when Easter, which was not a festival of God, should be kept. And they determined their time would be, I think it's the first Sunday after the equinox, spring equinox, that they keep Easter. And then the third thing is that we see that God says it shall be the Lord's Passover, specifically named the first festival of God on the 14th day of the first month. So they changed the name from Passover then to Easter. Over 300 bishops threw their support to the decision. Now, it's also interesting that Constantine went on and said that the Jews boast that without their instructions, we should be unable to commemorate the festival properly. In other words, he's saying that the Jews are saying, you need us to help you keep the festival, which would be Passover, properly. Constantine wrote, "This is the highest pitch of absurdity. We don't need the Jews. We don't need them to tell us what to do and how to, you know, set apart the day in which to observe." He went on. He said, How can they entertain right views on any point after having compassed the death of the Lord, being out of their minds, and they're not guided by sound reason? He said, since they are the ones who killed the Lord, why would you follow anything they had to say? So he said, it's absurdity. Well, you know, the Jews were taking their instructions from God. They were taking their instructions from the Bible right here in these verses in Leviticus. And those words carried a lot more weight than Constantine's words. In fact, Constantine went on to say, by rejecting their custom, we establish and hand down to succeeding ages one which is more reasonable. We're going to give you a more reasonable way to keep Easter than the Jews did with their Passover. Now, in my mind, that is absurdity. That is absurdity. More reasonable than God's instructions? Man-made instructions more reasonable than God's instructions? I'm sure we're all aware that in a few short weeks, as we've already heard in the sermonette, we're going to be keeping the first festivals of God for this season, Passover and the Days of Unleavened Bread. As we've seen, these are not Jewish days, nor are they man-devised, but they are appointed times. Appointed times which God determined. So what we do normally every season, we spend some time reviewing the commands that God gave us about His holy days, and we're going to do that again today, but we're also going to focus on this particular phrase here, at their appointed times. At their appointed times. Now, what does that mean? And so the title of the sermon is, At Their Appointed Times. Let's go back here to Leviticus 23. Let's look at verse 2. Look at verse 2. Speak to the children of Israel. Say to them, the feast of the Lord. So you see that's repeated there in verse 4. The feast of the Lord, which you shall proclaim to be holy convocations. These are my feasts. So again, we see that God says they are His feasts and proclaimed to be holy convocations. Now it's very interesting when you read this in the Hebrew Masoretic text. The Hebrew Masoretic text says the following. The appointed seasons of the Lord, which you shall proclaim to be holy convocations, even these are my appointed seasons. So here you see in the Hebrew it says seasons. In the New King James, here in the English, we see the feasts. Well, now why is that a difference here? Why one word feasts and in the Hebrew it's seasons? Well, it comes from the same Hebrew word for seasons and feasts. It's the word moed, M-O-E-D, moed. And that word can mean an appointed time. It can mean a place. It can mean a meeting. Brown, Driver, and Briggs' lexicon says this about this particular word. A holy season, a set feast, an appointed season, a day or days of appointed seasons or festivals. So it could be intertwined with one another, either feasts or seasons. Now, what's fascinating is this word moed is also first mentioned in the Bible back here in Genesis 1, verse 14. Let's look at Genesis 1, verse 14. Genesis 1, verse 14. Then God said, let there be lights in the firmament of the heavens to divide the day from the night, and let them be for signs and seasons and for days and years. Seasons there is the word moed, which could also be translated festivals. Let the lights be for signs and seasons. Now, while we're here in this particular verse, let's look at the word for signs. God is saying, let there be lights, let them be for signs. What does this mean? Now, when you look at the complete word studies of the Old Testament, that word for signs is O-T-H, O-T-H, oath. It's an indicator or a signal of something. It may be a marking of time. Another lexicon says it is a token. It could even be a token of a change of weather or of times. So what this verse is telling us is that it confirms here in the Hebrew that the sun and the moon are the lights being referred to and that they are for signs. Now how are they for signs? It's not stated. It is not stated in this verse how the moon and the sun can be for signs. It just says they are for signs. Now people use this verse who believe that you have to fully observe the moon when it is has the first crescent of the moon to determine the new moon. They say you have to observe it to determine when the new month begins. But you do not find in this verse that the crescent of the new moon was the sign to be used for. That's reading something into the verse that is not there. In reality, it basically says the lights will be for signs, seasons, days, and years. Let's go to Psalm 104. And in verse 19, Psalm 104, verse 19. He appointed, talking about God, he appointed the moon for seasons. Same word, moed. Seasons or holy festivals. The appointment of the moon for the seasons. The sun knows it's going down. The sun always sets. There's sunset. That begins the day. That ends the day. Sunset. So, we gotta make a statement here, that when we look at both Genesis 1, verse 14, and Psalm 104, we do not see any specific instructions as to what to look for. All we see is that, the sun and the moon are lights, and they're to be used for signs, for seasons. It says nothing about looking for a crescent of the new moon. So how these verses talk about signs here, how that was determined, we don't see that in these verses. Nothing is specifically defined of what these signs are. The calendar issue is quite complex. It's a very detailed, and we do have a very detailed study paper online all about it. You can read how the months and the years are determined. And so we're not going to get into that depth of it, but I do want to just, in simplistic terms, talk about a few issues about the calendar. Because God says, I have appointed this time for you to keep these days, so we need to know when that appointed time is. We see that God created two great lights. We know that the sun determines at sunset the end of the day and the beginning of the day, and we know that the moon determines the months from one new moon to the other. The Hebrew calendar is based on from one new moon to the other, and it's also based on the sun and its seasons. That is the calendar the church has used for in this day and age and over the years. to determine when the holy days are to be proclaimed. So, just a couple of facts, and again, like I say, it's a very detailed study, but the months in the Hebrew calendar are established based on what was called the Molad of Tishri. Now, the Molad means the new moon. A Tishri is the seventh month of the Hebrew calendar. The first day of the seventh month, do you know what holy day that is? Feast of Trumpets. Feast of Trumpets. The Jewish calendar is based on when the Feast of Trumpets is established, when that new moon of the Feast of Trumpets is established. The Molad of Tishri, or Molad, is what astronomers call the conjunction of the Earth, the moon, and the sun. They're all in the same line. They're all right there in the same line. That's the conjunction, or the Molad of what we would say would be the beginning of a new moon. I want to quote from a British physicist. Colin Humphreys says the following. He said, it's very important to understand that the new moon itself is invisible to the naked eye, human eye, because it is lost in the glare of the sun. At the time of conjunction, when the moon, earth, and sun are all in the same line, at that time, it's completely invisible to the unaided eye. He said it is only after a certain length of time, typically about 30 hours, that the first faintly glowing lunar crescent becomes visible. So you have that conjunction take place and up to 30 hours before you see the first slight crescent of the new moon. 2 weeks later, what do we all see 2 weeks later after that? It's the full moon. The full moon. And that's why you find on the 15th day of the first month, you have a full moon for the first day of unleavened bread. 15th day of the seventh month, you have the full moon for the Feast of Tabernacles. So, this might be a little bit detailed here, but I thought it'd be interesting to hear this. The average lunar month, according to the Hebrew calendar, 29 days, 12 hours, 44 minutes, 3.3 seconds. Now, they've been able to determine that by calculation. The Jewish calendar, the Jewish people have been able to determine that it's 29 days, 12 hours, 44 minutes, and 3.3 seconds to determine when the next moon will be. A number of years ago, NASA, with all of their telescopes and all of their, you know, computers, they went and checked the average time of the new moon, the time from one new moon to the next. And they found that the Hebrew calendar, which the Jews say has been in existence for over 3,000 years, they have said that the difference between that time period of the lunar month and with all that they had determined, it was no more than two millionths of a day, or a little part, not even a second, but a less than a second. 2 millionths. And they were, they found it phenomenal that that same NASA measurement was the same as the Jewish calendar. It's truly amazing. Now, here's a question. The moon, you know, from one new moon to the next, it's 29 days, you know, 12 hours. Well, you know, over a year, that adds up to 11 days short of a solar year. solar year is 365.4 days. So how do you fix this in the calendar? How do you fix this? You've got fewer days in these months, and yet you've got many more days in a solar year. If you don't do something with that, the calendar will go out of sync. Let me give you an example. We are based on the Roman calendar, and that's based on the sun. And so we have the, you know, the 365.4 days in the year. The Muslim calendar is based on the moon. They keep a festival called Ramadan. Have you ever noticed Ramadan is not kept at the same time every year? Because it goes through seasons. Because they only have a lunar calendar and they don't sync it with the sun. So, God shows that the lunar calendar should be synced with the seasons. Let's look at Deuteronomy 16, verse 1. Deuteronomy 16, verse 1. Here's another scripture that is often used to discuss the calendar. Observe the month of Abib. Keep the Passover to the Lord your God, for in the month of Abib, the Lord your God brought you out of Egypt by night. It's in this month that Passover is to be kept. Not only are we told that it's to be on the 14th day of the first month, it is to be kept in Abib. It is always to be kept in that month, the first month. So, why is this important? Why is this important? Let me read from the Jewish Sansino commentary. And again, we don't see any command here to watch for the new moon in Abib, but we do see something very interesting. You have Leviticus and you have Deuteronomy. You have Genesis and you have Psalms. And the way that this verse is explained, and I'm reading from the commentary here, as Israel is a lunar year, which is 11 days shorter than the solar year, it is bound to bring about a shifting of its festivals from their proper seasons. And that could happen if it was only a lunar calendar. To overcome this, it is enjoined here that the Passover should always coincide with the month of Abib. The month of the Abib means the season of ripe ears. It's the time of the barley season, when the season would be ripe ears. The season in which Israel was liberated from Egypt. This is achieved by inserting an extra month, the second, called the second Adar. You have Tishri, the first, the seventh month, the sixth month is called Adar. What the Hebrew calendar has done is that in order to keep the Passover in the spring of the time of the ripe ears, is that seven different years out of a 19-year cycle. The Jewish calendar is a 19-year cycle. Seven times in that cycle, there's what's called an intercalary year that's added. That's like a leap year. You know, every 4 years, we have to add a leap day to kind of stay within season. What the Jews have done is that, you know, 11 days kind of adds up every couple months. They add another month. Seven times in 19 years. It's not every other year. It's a calculation that they were able to determine in order to keep the Passover in the season of Abib, time of the green ears in the spring. That's how it's kept. That's how it's kept. It's all calculated. Now let's look at another statement here in verse 1. It says, observe the month of Abib and keep the Passover. The word for keep is shamar. Now, shamar can have a very narrow definition of watching, but the most important facet of this word keep is what complete word studies of the New Testament talk about, that in a religious vein, it expresses a careful attention to the obligation of the covenant to keep the laws and the statutes. In other words, you shall keep my statutes and my judgments. And we keep the Passover. We observe the Passover. It does not include really any sense of watching for anything, like for the crescent moon or for the green ears of barley. The main focus is to keep the Passover in the month of Abib. So, these days that God proclaimed were set in their seasons, and we find that they are to be kept, the Passover for sure, on the 14th day of the first month, unleavened bread on the 15th day. In order for all of us to keep these days on the same day, so we're all observing God's days on the time He appointed, we need the same calendar. We need the same calendar. I think we could all understand that we would not base our keeping of the holy days on our current Roman calendar. Otherwise, Passover is already over. Because that would have taken place on the 14th day of the first month, which is January. That's why my principal couldn't understand when he said, he looked at a note for me to take off from school during the holy days, and we were to take off in the seventh month, and he said, you missed it. You should have taken off in July. I said, no. It was called the Hebrew calendar. So we don't use the Roman calendar. And as I said, we don't use the Islamic calendar either. We have to use a calendar that not only determines when that time is in the first month, but when that first month occurs within the seasons and is kept within the seasons. And there are calculations that have been done to coordinate that all so that we keep the spring holy days in the spring and the fall holy days in the fall. And again, the calendar paper explains that in great detail. So there have been some people who say, well, to be biblically accurate, you really got to look for the observation of the new crescent of the new moon when that occurs. Well, you cannot find that in the Bible. And the other thing is, the Bible doesn't even say, well, where do you look for that? What place on earth do you look for the crescent? And then what do you do if it's cloudy? Like today. How would you be able to see the moon today? What would you do? So those are answers that aren't really explored when people will mention what they bring about this. Again, these questions are addressed in the calendar paper. When I was in college, we had a half a semester dealing with the calendar. And it's quite interesting when you go through it, especially if you are into math, which I'm not. But when you are into math and you see how it flows together and links within the seasons, it is absolutely phenomenal. And that's why when the church sends us the calendar for the holy days, you look at that calendar and it's got, what, 4, 5, 6 years already established? It's all by calculation. and it's a mathematically accurate calendar. For me personally, there are three scriptures that have helped me to see that there had to be a calendar that's been calculated. Let me give you those three scriptures. 1 Samuel 20. This was the time of David and Jonathan, the best of friends, and Saul, David's father-in-law, Jonathan's dad, was trying to kill David. Notice in 1 Samuel 20, verse 5, David said to Jonathan, "Indeed, tomorrow is the new moon. I shall not fail to sit with the king to eat, but let me go that I may hide in the field until the third day at evening." Let's look at verse 18. Then Jonathan said to David, "Tomorrow is the new moon. You will be missed because your seat will be empty." Verse 24. Then David hid in the field, and when the new moon had come, the king sat down to eat the feast. They both knew it was the next day. How did they know that? If they knew it was the next day, they both had to have known it even before they met one another to discuss this. Because the plan was about going to the meal for the new moon. In fact, the meal had to have been planned for that to have occurred. How did they know it, that it would come then? I believe it had to have been through their understanding of calculation of when that new moon would come. Now let's look at Matthew 26, verse 2. Matthew 26, verse 2. And Jesus Christ is saying, "You know that after 2 days is the Passover, and the Son of Man will be delivered up to be crucified." So we know that the Passover was on the 14th day of the first month. Here 2 days before, which would have been the 12th, Jesus is telling his disciples that the Passover is going to happen and he would be crucified. He would be delivered and crucified. So they knew that the 14th day was coming up. Now, the beginning of the month had to have occurred earlier, and they all knew that the Passover was going to come. And we don't see anyone saying, "Well, wait a minute, we got to look to see if the green ears are, if the barley is ripe." We don't see anyone saying, "Well, we got to make sure that the crescent of the moon has been seen." All we see is Jesus Christ saying, 2 days is the Passover, and the Son of Man will be crucified, which he was, on the Passover, the 14th day of the first month. So they had to have known when the Passover was going to take place. Acts 2, verse 1. Acts 2 and verse 1. It's interesting that some people who say, "Well, you really can't use calculation to keep the holy days." Well, what is this all about in Acts 2, verse 1? "And when the day of Pentecost had fully come, they were with one accord in one place." Pentecost is the only holy day that is determined by calculation, by counting. From that first Sunday during the days of unleavened bread, or within the days of unleavened bread, from that Sabbath in the days of unleavened bread, beginning on that Sunday, they count in the 50 days. So, therefore, the holy days had to have been set for sure, the spring holy days, for even Pentecost to have been kept. And they were all there, one accord, one place, on the same day. In fact, the Jews even knew it was the time of Pentecost, like it says in verse 5. There were dwelling in Jerusalem Jews, devout men from every nation under heaven. They had come there to keep Pentecost. In order to have known that, they had to have known which day it was. Let's look at Romans 3. Romans 3. And let's look at verse 1 and 2. Romans 3, verse 1 and 2. What advantage then has the Jew, or what is the profit of circumcision? Much in every way, chiefly because to them were committed the oracles of God. That doesn't mean that the Jews are better than anyone else. It just means that God had given them a responsibility to keep the oracles, and actually it was God who committed the oracles to them. God had committed the oracles. And we know that we see later that Jews and Greeks are all under sin, like it says in verse 9. So it isn't that they were super special over anyone else. It was just that God had used the Jews to keep the Holy Scriptures. The Hebrew Scriptures were kept. The Old Testament was preserved by the Jews. The oracles basically means words. Basically means words. Words or scriptures. We see that the words, the scriptures in Leviticus tells us that God proclaimed or appointed his holy days, and they're to be kept at specific times. They're to be kept within the year, appointed times. So we can deduce from the fact that God said these are his holy days, these are his laws, then wouldn't it seem logical that the Jews not only would preserve the words of God, the Hebrew Scriptures, they would be able to preserve the calendar on which those days should be observed, and to keep them on the appointed time without them going out of season, without them going on a season. So here we have here, preserved in the Bible, the appointed times when the Passover and the days of unleavened bread will take place. And they will be proclaimed. They were to be proclaimed. We saw that earlier back in Leviticus 23 verse 2 and verse 4. The word for proclaimed is a word from Hebrew called, the name is kara, Q-A-R. Q-A-R means proclaimed. It actually means to pronounce. It actually also means to publish. In order to publish something, one has to know when it will take place. It has the sense of a summons, an invitation. So, what did God mean when he told Moses, and he commanded Moses, to proclaim his festivals? So what Moses was given was the responsibility to summon, invite Israel. And we are the Israel of God. And so in a sense, the church has been given the responsibility to summon all of us to keep his holy days. When these holy convocations are proclaimed, we've been summoned by God to keep them on the days that he had chosen. So that's what we plan to do once again this year. Let me go through and review a couple of meanings of these days. I'm sure a lot of us have kept these over the years, but it's good to review a couple of things. When Jesus Christ kept his last Passover, he instituted three new things that were not done in the Old Testament. Let's look at the first over here in John 13. John 13. You do not find this as part of the rituals done in the Old Testament during the time of the Passover, when the lamb was, lambs were to be killed. You find in chapter 13, let's start in verse 4. He rose from supper, laid aside his garments. He took a towel and he girded himself. After that, he poured water into a basin and began to wash the disciples' feet and to wipe them with a towel with which he was girded. And in verse 14, if I then, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you ought to also wash one another's feet, for I have given you an example that you should do as I've done to you. And so we will do that as an example of following Jesus Christ. It's an attitude of humility. It's an attitude of humility. And so we will, the men will be paired up with the men, and the women will be paired up with the women in separate rooms. Please bring a towel. Basins will be provided. A summary of what we're to do next and what Jesus Christ instituted is over here in 1 Corinthians 11. 1 Corinthians 11. 1 Corinthians 11, and let's start in verse 23. First Corinthians 11, verse 23. I received from the Lord that which I delivered to you, that the Lord Jesus, on the same night in which he was betrayed, took bread. When he had given thanks, he broke it and said, take, eat, this is my body which is broken for you, do this in remembrance of me. In the same manner, he took the cup after supper, saying, this cup is the new covenant in my blood. This do as often as you drink it in remembrance of me. For as often as you eat this bread and drink this cup, you proclaim the Lord's death till he comes. And that's kind of interesting when we think about it. The Passover was to be proclaimed. We are summoned. And then when we keep the Passover on the 14th day of the first month at evening, the beginning of the 14th day, which we do, what are we doing? We're proclaiming the Lord's death. We are reminding ourselves of what Jesus Christ did for us. He instituted the giving of the unleavened bread as symbolic for his beaten body, for our sins and for our illnesses, for our well-being, for his whole sacrifice included what he went through. And then, of course, he gave the disciples wine, symbolic of his shed blood. That's how he was died. He was pierced. And we have his shed blood so our sins could be forgiven. Now, before we partake of the Passover, we need to do some thinking. Take some time to reflect. Verse 27. Therefore, whoever eats this drink and bread or drinks this cup of the Lord in an unworthy manner will be guilty of the body and the blood of the Lord. But let a man examine himself, and so let him eat of the bread and drink of the cup. So we don't take it haphazardly. We must be sure we know what we're doing. With thought, we have to discern the Lord's body, as it says in the last part of verse 29. Don't take it for granted. As we approach this time of year, we need to continually ask ourselves, how much is the Lord's mind in us? We're to come to the full stature of Jesus Christ. It begins with our understanding of his sacrifice, what he did for us, and the meaning of the bread and the wine, after washing one another's feet. So we will be keeping the Passover again. It will take place on Thursday evening, March 29th. Here in St. Louis, we will be meeting together at the Doubletree Inn, that's right across from the Gateway Center. That will begin at 7:25. Sunset's a little earlier, so that'll begin at 7:25, the Doubletree Inn. We're asking that we come 10, 15 minutes early, make sure we get there in time, so everybody's seated, ready to go for services. No children are to be brought. This is for baptized members only, baptized according to what the Bible brings out regarding baptism. I mentioned it's not long to say hello or, you know, make a few comments, but to carry on a long conversation that evening with someone would not be in keeping with the sanctity of the evening. So we're encouraged to approach the evening with the holiness that it deserves. Now, while we're here in Corinthians, and we heard this earlier in the sermonette, 1 Corinthians 5, verse 6 to 8, we heard that already, but I just want to focus on one thing over here. 1 Corinthians 5, verse 8. Let's look at verse 8. Therefore, let's keep the feast, not with the old leaven, nor with the leaven of malice and wickedness, but with the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth. This is the feast. This is after the Passover. We are in need of a continual removal of sin. Even though we have been forgiven of our sins through Jesus Christ's sacrifice, and we are reminded every year of his sacrifice, what he did for us, we still have to realize that we need to change our lives to become more like Jesus Christ, because we're not yet perfect. We're still human. The eating of the unleavened bread during the days of unleavened bread is different than the eating of the unleavened bread during Passover. During Passover, the unleavened bread represents the beaten body of Jesus Christ. During the days of unleavened bread, the unleavened bread represents the need to live a life without pride, without sin, without leaven. We have to live a life that is unleavened. And we have to get rid of the hypocrisy. We have to get rid and replace it with an attitude of sincerity. We got to get rid of malice and evil and replace it with the truth. So we must make sure no leaven to be in our possession. We need to remove leaven from our houses or the area in which we have control over, such as our desk at work or our cars, to get rid of the leaven there, the toaster, and don't forget to empty the vacuum bag as well. And I know that I think I mentioned it here one time, that a family had kept the top of their wedding cake for years in the freezer. And then one year they realized, oh, this has leaven. So they had to, I think they ate it before they had to get rid of it. But finally, after a number of years, so we just have to make sure that we are not eating any leavened breads or cookies or cakes. Anything made with yeast or baking soda should not be used that week or eaten. We eat matzahs and triscuits, anything without leaven. Homemade unleavened bread. We do this for 7 days. I think we're all aware of that. The festival begins with the night to be observed. Exodus 12. Let's look at Exodus 12. Exodus 12, and let's look at verse 41. Exodus 12, verse 41. It came to pass at the end of the 430 years, on that very same day, came to pass that all the armies of the Lord went out from the land of Egypt. It is a night of solemn observance to the Lord for bringing them out of the land of Egypt. So it's that beginning of the 15th day after sunset. The beginning of the 15th day after sunset, that solemn night of observance. And here, the word for observance here, this solemn night of observance, can also mean, as it says here, it's a night to the Lord, a solemn observance for all the children of Israel throughout all their generations. That has a word that can mean watching in this particular verse. But here we're seeing that God was watching over Israel and protecting Israel. And Israel was very much aware of God's watching over them, and they were watching how God was doing this for them. And we realize that our focus should be on God and what he did for us. and the knowledge he gave us. And so we eat a meal and we fellowship to celebrate our coming out of spiritual Israel. So the night to be observed will be on Friday evening, March 30th. I know in Rolla we're planning to have a potluck meal. We don't have anything planned here in this area of everybody getting together. Now some will host others in their homes. That's fine. That's fine. Others will go to private rooms at a restaurant. Going to a restaurant is fine. Just make sure, try to make sure it's private. Best to get a private room. Our goal here in St. Louis is to do everything we can so everybody has a place to go with other members so we can enjoy this together with another member. If you need a place to attend and you would like to participate, please let one of the elders or deacons know so that we can make sure that everyone has an opportunity to participate in the night to be observed. The law of this festival is also found in Exodus 13. Exodus 13, we do know that the first day of unleavened bread is on the 15th, according to Leviticus, but in Exodus 13, verse 6, 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread, and on the seventh day there shall be a feast to the Lord. Leavened bread shall be eaten 7 days. No leavened bread shall be seen among you or among all your quarters. You shall tell your son in that day, this is done because of what the Lord did for me when I came up out of Egypt. It shall be a sign to you. Now here you have a sign of unleavened bread. A sign to you that the law was to be between your eyes and on your mouth. So, much meaning behind the days of unleavened bread. It's a yearly observance. So it includes holy days on the first day of unleavened bread and the last day of unleavened bread. We will keep those again. The first day of unleavened bread is on the Sabbath, March 31st. We will only have one service that holy day. That will be right here, March 31st at 2:30. Now the last holy day, seventh day of unleavened bread, will be on Friday, April 6th. Not too often do we have a Friday holy day and then the Sabbath the next day, but we will have two services on that day, 10:30 and at 2 o'clock. Rolla is coming up to combine with us, and we will be meeting at the Holiday Inn, Route 66. We cannot use this hall, and we cannot use any place out in Illinois, but we can use the Holiday Inn, Route 66. That's where we will meet. We will not have any potluck meals between services. So therefore, I guess we could go to McDonald's and order a hamburger without the bun. So, something like that. But we'd have to go to a place, and we cannot bring any food in the place there. I know there's some parks around, but just wanted to mention that the Holiday Inn, Route 66, will be where we will have the last day of unleavened bread. On both holy days, we will collect the holy day offering. I hope all of us are planning for that. We give that on each holy day in order to honor God, to thank God for all the blessings he's given to us. And we honor him in that regard. And in conclusion then, let's look at Numbers 9. Numbers 9. I might mention that once we get the schedule out to everybody, then we'll have all of this listed on the schedule. But it's always good to know where we're meeting and planning for it all here in the local area. Numbers 9, verse 2. Let the children of Israel keep the Passover at its appointed time. As I said, we are the Israel of God. Let the church of God, let the Israel of God keep the Passover at its appointed time. And God very specifically told us that time. On the 14th day of this month, which was Abib, At twilight you shall keep it at its appointed time. According to all of its rites and ceremonies you shall keep it. Now we don't follow the Old Testament Passover, we follow the New Testament Passover. And its rites and ceremonies include foot washing, the breaking of the unleavened bread, and each eating a piece of unleavened bread, and the drinking of wine. We will be doing that, and we will keep it according to its rites and ceremonies. So Moses told the children of Israel that they should keep the Passover. And God is telling all of us we should keep the Passover, the days of unleavened bread, at their appointed times. So let's do all we can as we prepare so that we can truly have a very meaningful Passover this year and a very meaningful Days of Unleavened Bread.